With the president heading off for a week of peacemaking and perhaps fence mending, we thought it would be a good time to check in with our regular political analysts, David Brooks, senior editor of the Weekly Standard, and E.J. Dionne, a columnist with the Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Hello to both of you.
Good to be here.
On the first stop of his trip, the president will meet face-to-face with some of his main adversaries in the debate over the war with Iraq. The media has certainly played up the possibility of a confrontation. What message do you think the president will carry to the summit, David?
It is sort of like walking up to the Oscar ceremony on the red carpet. It's like, will he double bus Chirac or single bus him? How firm will the handshake be with Schroeder? And it is about, on one level, just about the human relations.
I don't think we're going to see a lot of air kisses here, really, though.
No, but we may not see a punch in the jaw, which would be a sign of improvement. But the bigger issue is the slow evolution of transatlantic relations. We used to think of there was this thing called the West. And the West was France, Germany, Britain, and the U.S., you know, sometimes fighting, but more or less acting in concert. That's no longer true. And now we have Poland, Central Europe, Russia, much more diverse and much less firmly aligned set of alliances and relationships. And so we're seeing the slow evolution of the movement away from the Cold War alliances to something else.
There will also be this issue, even though they may not want to talk about it, the issue of the war will always be looming over the meetings. And the president can't exactly go to Europe and say, I told you so. I mean, the troops are still looking for the weapons of mass destruction. The recent bombings have showed us once again that al-Qaeda still poses a formidable threat. So what will he say, EJ?
Well, I think the view in Europe is we told you so, you know, in several respects. One is that the situation on the ground in Iraq is very bad, and a lot of people who oppose the war or oppose the war the way the war happened didn't do so because they thought Saddam Hussein was a good guy. They said if we go in this way without broad alliances, we're going to have a lot of problems winning the peace. I think one of the questions is, looking at the situation we face in Iraq, is it not in the interest of the president to forget a little bit of this past and say, we really want to spread the cost of rebuilding this country, not only the cost in money, but the human cost of occupying the place. And so I think it's a very interesting judgment the president has to make. And I think the having the pragmatic judgment trump the, if you will, the judgment based on grudges would probably be a smart thing for him to do.
But if you look at the president's history here in the White House, even going back to his tenure in the State House in Texas, and even as in his time as a CEO, as a businessman, this guy carries a grudge.
He carries a grudge with a sense of compassionate conservatism. No, he does carry
which
a grudge.
Which is the perfect definition of compassionate conservatism.
He really does carry grudges.
He has not forgiven France, and he has not forgiven Schroeder, because he has the sense that Schroeder said to him, I will not use anti-Americanism to win this election, and his sense, his Bush's sense, is that Schroeder lied about that. Bush also goes in there with a sense that I was absolutely right about the war, and we saw Tony Blair express that today. But I do think you're right. They are going to want, at least on the official level, to move beyond that. And as they've said in marriage counseling, you don't talk about the fight you had last week. You talk about the chores you've got to do today.
I think it really is a problem for the United States if none of these weapons are found, because we will not look good as a country over the long haul if we made claims to lead us into war, and you shouldn't be led into war on the basis of questionable claims.
Now, the real meat of this trip will take place in the second leg of his journey, where the president will make a personal pitch for the U.S. roadmap. There are extremely high expectations on both sides, from the Israelis and the Palestinians. This is really a high-stakes gamble for him, is it not, EJ?
The fact that the president is going means he is committed to this process for the long haul, whether he likes it or not. It's much harder to walk away now that he's walked into it. I think there's a real opportunity for several first steps. Then it gets really complicated, as Middle East peace talks always do.
The president has agreed to meet with Ariel Sharon individually and with Mahmoud Abbas individually. He said he will meet with both if events warrant that. How significant is that? And is that, should we read anything into that, that he wants to perhaps approach this with a light touch, that he doesn't want to be pulled too deeply into the peacekeeping process?
He doesn't want to start with a shouting match of what you guys did wrong, which is the way traditionally a lot of these meetings have started. He's caught the Middle East bug. I began to hear this from White House staff a year ago, before Desert Storm. And the biggest fight they had within the administration was the fight President Bush gave about Yasser Arafat, when he said Yasser Arafat was no longer going to be recognized as a partner. And from that point forth, I think Bush was deeply emotionally involved in the Middle East in solving this crisis. And I think that decision made before the war really was the crucial one. And that has led to this moment where you not only get a momentum toward peace, but you also get other Arab countries, Jordan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, most significantly, cooperating in the marginalization of Arafat, cooperating at least in proto-form with the idea of defunding Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And so that's where the real movement is. And there's also a sense for the first time from the United States that it's not just a question of drawing the right lines on a map and having some technocratic process. It's actually creating and enhancing some sort of reform within the Palestinian Authority. That's what will lead to peace, not some technocratic, you know, blueprint.
The president heads out of town on a relatively high note. He signed the tax package with much fanfare this week. But when you look back at what the White House actually proposed, EJ, is this really a victory?
Oh, I think it's a huge victory for Bush in the short haul. I think it's a terrible tax package, and I think it's not a terribly popular tax package, judging from all the polls. But Bush had a very, very narrow margin in both houses of Congress and pushed through what amounts to a very radical restructuring of the American tax system in favor of the wealthy and in favor of investors. There was a wonderful embarrassment this week where it turned out that in the negotiations sort of at the end of the tax package, somehow there wasn't room for $3.5 billion for families with kids earning between $10,500 and $26,625 a year. So everybody gets taken care of except the working poor. And I think it's a very important symbolic issue that has real effect.
But Democrats will bring it up again. Why aren't they bringing it up now? I mean, it would seem that the White House, that this was just a fat pitch over the plate. And the Dems have been somewhat mute.
I thought the Democrats could have won this debate. I thought the public support for this tax cut was moderate. I thought there was a lot of anxiety among Republicans in Capitol Hill. And if there was a creative leadership, a Democratic leadership in the Senate, I think they could have beat it. But about this, about the actual substance of the cut, I was moderately supportive of this bill. On the one hand, because I think the economy and the world economy really need some kind of stimulus, and this will do it. The long-term damage, of course, is to the deficits over the long term, and those are significant. And we're beginning to see a lot of talk about that. You've got all these Democratic presidential candidates running around with healthcare plans and other ideas, and they said we're going to pay for that by rolling back the Bush tax cuts. And that was politically doable. After this has passed into law, now they've physically got to raise taxes. That's politically undoable. So that forces the Democrats, and eventually it's going to force the Republicans, to get to the core issue. We can't do anything domestically unless we tackle entitlements. So to me, the central political effect of this whole complicated tax debate is that in the next 4 years, we're going to have to tackle Social Security. We're going to have to tackle Medicare. That's going to be the agenda for the next president, whoever it is.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
David Brooks is senior editor at the Weekly Standard. E.J. Dionne is a columnist at the Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.